4. On problems of personality. But my biggest problem is really myself. I'll never be good enough for God. So what does that mean, to be good enough for God? What does he want you to be? I guess he wants me to be like him, holy and kind and good and thinking always of heavenly things. I try, but I can never keep it up. And I pray and pray, but I never change. First, we must ask, what are you trying to change, your spirit or your personality? The spirit must change, but it already has when God came to dwell within. Without such a change, you'd never be able to relate to God at all. When God made man, he breathed into him his spirit and made him a spirit being like himself. But in the process of human rebellion, the spirit of God withdrew and in concourse with God was cut off. It is only restored when his Holy Spirit comes to dwell within us. But what of the mortal self, that which remains of us when the flame of God expired? Aye, there's the rub, the self, the natural man, the flesh, as Paul called it. In it, said Paul, in me there dwells no good thing, while Jesus said, the flesh is weak, but the spirit is strong. And experience has taught us that whatever the height the spirit achieves, the flesh is a problem continually. So while the spirit is fully restored, filled forever with Christ, the self is uncertain as long as we live. But what is that self? Are not self and spirit the same? Should not they change together? The self is you as a person that has evolved from the genes, all your character traits and mannerisms. It's how you act and think and feel, things you were born with and things you acquired. It is sometimes called the ego, the personality. And what is this personality? It's the sum total of all our behavior patterns, both from the environment and from the genes. The brain and the nervous systems are physical instruments through which the self is developed and expressed. The brain stores up knowledge and experience and uses the data for shaping our thoughts and feelings and actions. The brain is the physical organ. The mind is the brain in action. It's the filing system storing and using data. Data forms a pattern or grid on the surface of the brain, the cortex. From it arise all thoughts and feelings and actions. In the natural sense, we are captives of the grid. We cannot think outside it. The mind must follow the pattern. But the data is faulty and incomplete, full of gaps and errors and bias, so we cannot fully depend on the natural mind. As the ideas we fashion with the mind are subject to much misconception, so human expressions of truth, alas, are full of confusion. That is why absolute truth can never be fashioned with finite human mind. Absolute truth exists in the spirit when Christ exists in the spirit, for Christ has said, I am the truth. So what is the truth? Truth is reality as the Greek word expresses it. Christ is the ultimate reality. Truth is only the human and faulty effort to define reality. The problem comes when the truth in the spirit is falsely framed and expressed through the limited instrument of the mind, and just so the other qualities of Christ in our spirits. We have Christ's love when we have him, but our human expression of love is faulty. So also peace and joy and faith. While we try to feel and express them, we often struggle with anxiety and doubt. But the peace of God is beyond understanding, the joy of Christ beyond pain. All is well in the spirit, the struggle is in the mind. We are filled with the fruit of the spirit as soon as he comes to dwell within, but the flesh, you see, often obscures reality. The tug of war is always there. We fight so hard to control the feelings, but there is no need for guilt or despair. God understands the fleshly conflict. He regards not the feelings in our mind, but what is in our spirits, that we care about him. So what does God do in us? In what way do we change if the self is still subject to weakness and error? We change, first of all, in our spirits, in our attitude towards God and self and others. We care what God thinks of us, and we care about others. In caring, we have the motive to control the natural mind, how we behave towards God and self and others. And having the motive, we also have assistance. God does help us to do what is right. The question is, How much change could there be? If the natural self were actually changed, we would have no further need of God's help. But Jesus said, without me you can do nothing. And Paul said, we have no confidence in the flesh. Our righteousness is of God in the Spirit. But is there no place left for the change in the self? Shouldn't our conduct improve with our growth? Ah, yes, but the change is in the conduct, not in the nature. There is a difference between change in behavior and change in the inner nature. If the nature were changed, it would need no control. If behavior requires conscious control, there has been no change of nature, though behavior would be ever so much in control. If the Spirit of God had come into our flesh, it would be changed and not need controlling. The Spirit possessed by God tends always to see things as God sees them, while the mind only follows when consciously controlled. The evidence of change in the Spirit is that it wants to please Christ and constantly cares when the self is failing. Though the Spirit changes, the flesh does not. It struggles with continual weakness, a weakness Jesus shared when he came to dwell on earth. When the human in Jesus cried out on the cross, "My God, why hast thou forsaken me?" it was a genuine feeling and not just an act. Jesus was never weak in the Spirit, though he oft tested it in the flesh, and he knew himself our feelings of weakness. Throughout his lifetime, Jesus admitted to things that hurt him, and things he did not know, to hunger and sorrow and weariness. But God is never unknowing or weary, and Jesus in spirit was God. So his spirit was divine, but his flesh was human. And just so ourselves, who possess the Spirit of God, we are often tested. It seems beyond our enduring, but steadfastly we hold on to God. So agreed then, the spirit is changed, but the self must control its behavior. How in the world do we handle self-control? Take not lightly the truth that the spirit is changed when the spirit gives motive and direction for control. If the spirit were not changed, whence would come the desire to keep the self in control? But keeping the self in control does not make us spiritual. Having the Spirit gives us the desire to keep the self in control. We try to keep the self in control because we want to please Christ. We want to please Christ because His Spirit is in us. The true motive of self-control is not the law without. It is the law within. The beginning of control is desire. The will is no match for an adequate motive. Without God, there is no reason for control. If life ends at the grave, self-interest is all that makes sense. But the Spirit of God within us frees us from the prison of self-interest and shows us the horizons of His purpose. And God helps us with motive by showing us the futility of faulty human choices. Sometimes He shows us by His Word, teaching us what life's all about, sometimes by painful experience. For instance, bad choices are often costly. When it has cost us enough, we make our choices more carefully. While changes in spirit require the power of God alone, control of self requires discipline, energized by the power of God. Sometimes God lets us pay the piper. He is not sending adversity as a penalty. He is showing us the cost of carelessness. God deals with us as children, with kindness and care, with assistance and chastening. But always God's purpose, through prosperity and adversity, is the shaping of our spirits. Paul said, affliction produces patience. James said, let patience have its perfect work. But remember, it is God who controls the afflictions. The greatest thing that God can do for us is to free us from dependence on earthly good for inner peace and contentment. Once we have peace with God in our spirits, we pursue the handling of self with quiet confidence that God is within us. We have latitude with God to cope with the problems of self, to know that He is with us in spite of our failures, to regard ourselves as part of His family, to know we can talk to Him, though we feel weak and unworthy. Satan attempts to discourage us, to drive a wedge with feelings of guilt. But Paul said, nothing can separate us from God. We won't make it through without Him there. We know He's still with us, because in our spirits we care. But then, how do we deal with the problems of self? What should our attitude be? First, we regard it as normal, a constant human problem, not something that drives us from God. And then we see, though the Spirit is changed, The flesh needs constant control, and the desire to control shows us God is with us. Also, we accept adversity and prosperity, not as measures of faith or piety, but the handiwork of God shaping our spirit. Further, we learn from the cost of our carelessness the importance of self-control and the value of listening to God. So God does help us to control the self, off through the experiences he allows us and off through the force of his word. We alter the patterns of our mind, losing old habits, gaining new ones. Nothing is permanent but the need for control. Some things God does, some things we do. But all is a lifelong process of working in union with God. Some problems go with us to the grave, like the thorn in the flesh of Paul. But therein is revealed God's strength and grace. All of us have things in our lives to cope with. We were born with them or acquired them, but God has allowed them. If we accept them and cope with them, our spirit grows stronger. If God would remove them, we would not grow. So go day by day and live in peace. Let your faith be in God and not in your feelings. Judge not his actions, but trust in his grace.